Welcome back to
Thank you.
the Film Experience Podcast. I'm Nathaniel, and I'm here with Joe.
He's won before.
Katie.
He's won before.
Nick.
He's won before.
Everyone's won before. And it's our first podcast after the Oscar nominations, so I will give you one guess, or three guesses as to what we're going to talk about.
Okay, hold on a second. I know this one.
First things first, because I want to get it out of the way, because each year when the Oscar nominations are announced, at least the first 24 hours is all about people bitching about the snubs. That dread word, snubs, that Nick hates so much.
I hate it too.
So I want to get that out of the way right away. Let's limit our talk about who we wish were there to one thing right now. Katie?
Ooh, I mean, I think I'm joining in the voice in favor of Ben Affleck. Like, even though I watched the Critics' Choice Awards when he won that Best Director thing, and people stood up for him like he was dying of cancer, and this is the last award he'd ever win in his life. Like, the amount of pity for him is kind of outrageous, but I am baffled by that. Like, it is that one of those things where, like, something that everyone saw as a lock just didn't happen. It's the one thing that I can't quite explain away, and that's what I think continues to fascinate me about it.
The Best Director category would have been more interesting for him being there.
I wildly disagree. I think it's so interesting now.
I think it's interesting now, but I think in terms of, like, who, you know, who has a threat to win, because I really thought that he was a real dark horse to beat Spielberg.
Yeah, I agree.
I love this Best Director top five. If you swap out David O. Russell for Kathryn Bigelow, I think it's a flawless top five. I haven't reacted as jubilantly to anybody getting an Oscar nomination in forever than I did for Ben Zeitlin when they said his name. I was shocked. I actually, like, whooped involuntarily.
Yeah. I'm sure I did too, because I was just shocked at how close the list is to my list. I'm like, this does not happen.
That's exciting.
Because Michael Haneke and Ben Zeitlin, who were both, you know, I mean, I predicted Michael Haneke, but I thought I was doing a wishful thinking prediction.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I do want to say about Ben Affleck before we move on to Nick and Joe's choices is I'm going to come at you with an article about this, but I think it's interesting that BAFTA, that they nominated Lincoln across the board, but not Spielberg.
That is interesting. I didn't realize that.
And then Oscar nominated Argo across the board, but not Ben Affleck.
Yeah, I thought it was very strange that Argo got the sound mixing, sound editing double, which for a movie that's not a very it doesn't seem like a technical juggernaut. Yeah, if they were reading the nominations in reverse and you saw the best sound mixing and sound editing nominations, you would think that they would have been over the moon for Argo, and then you get to the top and Affleck's not there, and it's even stranger.
Although I remember when it came out, and a lot of people compared it, or I heard several people say, this reminds them of really good Ron Howard, and I've kind of been thinking about Apollo 13 for a while, and it's done exactly the same thing, right? Like, front runner, still full of nominations, probably going to win a few of them, and
yeah, that's actually that's a really good comparison.
That's a great comparison. And then, so he'll get his makeup nomination for, you know, whatever he does two movies from now.
Yeah.
Or makeup win, rather.
And he might even still get the DGA. Like, that could even still happen.
Mm-hmm. That's the interesting thing about this weirdly spaced out calendar. The precursors haven't had a chance to catch up. So all of a sudden you're seeing things like the Critics' Choice giving Affleck director. And I feel like you could. Somebody mentioned on Twitter that, like, you could see Affleck winning everything across the board.
Yeah.
Having no preparation for the Oscar, because this is the first year in, like, 5 years where none of the acting categories match up to SAG exactly, which I think that's...
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Exciting. Like, it's...
Okay, so Nick, what would you say is your biggest aww?
Probably Tom Hooper. I'm just kidding. It's it's obviously Matthew McConaughey. And I know, I should have listened to you earlier, but it's still Matthew McConaughey.
I stuck in believing in him too, and I just wanted it to happen so badly I couldn't give up on it.
I love, Katie, that you and I were like the two out there still predicting him and just being like, it's gonna happen.
Like, guys, just, if we say it enough times, maybe it will.
I know.
Such we see the limitations of our power.
Yeah.
Is Christoph the Django you would at least the Django performance you least wanted to see in there?
Well, I don't. No, Leonardo DiCaprio would have been the one that I would have least wanted to see in there, I guess, but I don't really get either of them. But it's more just that, I mean, I don't even think that's the, there are performances in that category that I think are sort of lamer nominations than his, but his was the spot that seemed kind of, you know, vulnerable maybe, and one just hoped, but one was disappointed, wasn't one. I can't talk about it more than that.
There's always Tampa.
There's always Tampa.
The ladies of Tampa are mourning today.
Yeah. And it is hilarious that we've gone from, you know, in a year's time to like, it's so sad that Matthew McConaughey's not nominated for an
Oscar.
I know. That's like climate change right there.
The Oscar cliff. Everything's different now.
Oh, we've gone off the Oscar cliff for sure.
Yeah, that's happened long ago.
Yeah.
Mine would also be, you know, well, I mean, everybody knows what it is, so I'll skip that, but...
Nicole.
Yeah, I think
also...
mine would be...
Yeah, Nicole would be mine, but I didn't want to say it for fear of beating the dead horse.
Aww. Well, she's got her, she'll have her Globe moment and she'll have her SAG moment, so...
She's not dead and not a horse.
That's totally true. Yeah, McConaughey would have been mine, too, although I also... In a non-specific way, just sort of looking at the screenplay nominations, I really, really wish they had been more adventurous.
Yeah.
Their choices. Like in the era of the top 10 or top 9 or whatever, mm-hmm. We're seeing a lot of like reluctance to go outside of that top 10 for screenplay nominations in the last few years, and I'm kind of bummed out. Like, no, Lord knows I love Life of Pi. It's probably my top 2, maybe even my number 1 movie of the year so far. And so far, I've seen basically. but I don't.
That's how long 2012 was. It's stretching into January.
Well, this thing is for us weird, you know, movie awards people. Like it basically still is 2012.
Yes.
And will be until the Oscars are over. But I don't get the Life of Pi adapted screenplay nomination. I certainly don't get the Flight nomination.
Oh God, that flight thing. I've realized it's a translation thing. I don't understand it. Like it's a complete disconnect. But there are people who really love it. There are a lot of really smart people who are psyched to see Flight make it in there.
Yeah, it's certainly my least favorite Tarantino script ever. So I don't get the Django thing.
For a second there, Joe, I was like your lead in. I was like, Tarantino wrote Flight. Wow, such a departure for him.
Flight might be about Tarantino.
There were just a lot of more interesting screenplays. I mean, obviously, Middle of Nowhere was a really, really, really outside shot, but we've seen the screenplay, the screenwriters sort of branch out in those kinds of directions before.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen them, like, you know, Perks of Being a Wallflower was probably always going to be a little too young mm-hmm. for the Academy, but it's not like, I mean, they nominated Lars and the Real Girl that one year. Like, it's not like they've been afraid to go that far out of the usual, you know, best picture suspects before. Mm-hmm. And this year they just sort of went really, really conservative, and I wish they had been a little more exciting.
Mm-hmm. Can I say one more?
Yes.
Because I'll never have anything to say about animated short ever again, but The Eagleman Stag, which is, I know Nathaniel loves it too,
is
a fantastic movie that if I put shorts in my top 10, it would be at least number 5. And the only reason it wasn't in contention last year is that the dude forgot and missed the deadline, which we were talking about the time I met him at the festival here. But it's a great, great, great movie, and maybe there are 5 better ones. I clearly don't know, but I hope there's some way for everybody to see it.
Well, you can watch it online.
Oh, great.
Which is how I saw it. And it is extraordinary. Like, it's one of these films that you can see every painstaking commitment to it happening. And yet it just moves. You know, it doesn't even feel heavy by its ambitions.
At all.
It's great.
Can you guys send me that link?
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I will. Yeah, I'll post it along with the podcast as well.
Better than Fresh Guacamole, though?
Yes.
Because, really, if we're talking about favorite movie titles on the entire Oscar list, Fresh Guacamole is a clear winner.
I love Fresh Guacamole, but it's not even my favorite short by Pez. Is that his name?
Sure.
Yeah, because Western Spaghetti was a couple years ago, which they didn't put in their
Oh, we saw that together.
Yes, we did, and I thought that was even better. So he kind of does. It's kind. He kind of has his own shtick, you know, his own.
Right.
Which is, you know, an unkind way of saying his own voice. So right. He probably shouldn't say that. But I was surprised because Fresh Guacamole is so short. I mean, it's really funny. Uh-huh. But I didn't think it was going to make the list.
God bless you for, like, actually taking that seriously, and I was just being a dick for how weird the title sounds.
This is not only the first ever all-winner podcast, but the only one where you heard about Fresh Guacamole inside 15 minutes. So it's rad here.
Oh, God.
Send in your donations.
Oh, I did take reader questions this time.
Oh, really?
Do you guys want to hear them?
Yes.
Yeah. Huh?
Okay, just give me one second. I should have had them queued up so I'd be ready to go.
What a tease you are.
I know.
So more about Fresh Guacamole, you guys.
Yes.
I like a little cilantro, but not a lot of cilantro because...
Okay. So here's a good one from Evan. And I think this is the Evan I just recently met at the screening of Contiki. Yeah. He says, given how small a role she plays in the film, what on earth will they use for Jackie Weaver's Oscar clip?
I was thinking this exact same thing.
The scene where he accidentally hits her, right? Are you thinking
the first
scene?
I would guess.
I forgot about that. I was thinking about when she sort of realizes in the car in the first scene that Chris Tucker's not supposed to be there.
That's probably a good one, too.
Yeah. It is a really small part, though. And I mean, she's in a lot of scenes, but it's very backgrounded.
Which, in the days since the nominations, it's one of the ones I've kind of changed my mind about a little bit. I still think it's totally weird, but it was one of the things that was seen most kind of outrageous to me on the morning of. But the idea that there is such a supporting performance
yeah.
of probably something that a lot of actors have to do all the time, which is be in
yeah.
a lot of shots where they don't get to do much. Like,
right.
yeah.
I doubt that's actually why she's nominated. I'm sure it has a lot to do with Harvey Weinstein, but I think
right.
that's, you know, there's something to be happy about there.
It does feel like one of those nominations where if she hadn't been nominated and you're, like, you know, 4 weeks into this 5-week, like, gulag march of an Oscar campaign, where we'd end up being like, you know what, Robert De Niro was okay in Silver Linings Playbook, but you know who was really great in a small role was Jackie Weaver. You know what I mean? She almost seems like a contrarian pick.
I'm going to argue that her Oscar clip should just be a replay of her Animal Kingdom clip. Because I think that's why she was nominated again.
I think it should be of the moment when she offered to adopt you.
Oh, that was so adorable. She was so adorable that I was sitting down having coffee with her, and she was clearly meeting a billion people that day. I totally forgot that the coffee had arrived, and I love coffee, so that's saying a lot. I never even took a sip of it while I was sitting with her.
It was your sweet words about Fresh Guacamole that got her.
I hope that we all learn how to make Krabby Snacks and Homemades before our Oscar parties. I still don't know what they are exactly. But
I know.
It's going to be such a delicious thing to serve people.
It is.
That's like all I ever wanted to do the year The Hours was nominated was make the crab thing.
The crab thing.
Somebody who knew how to make the crab thing. It's still the most tragic scene in that entire movie when that whole thing just gets dumped into the trash. Like,
yeah, it really is.
Just entirely. Just that giant serving dish. Anyway.
Nathaniel, this was a year before I knew you, but didn't Ryan actually make the crab thing?
Which movie are we talking about?
The Hours.
The Hours.
Oh, The Hours.
That was part of the first story you ever told me about foods at your house for your people's party.
Yeah.
And like the raw hank of meat for Gangs of New York and the Marzipan Golem. I don't forget shit like that.
Yeah, the Marzipan Golem was my personal triumph.
That's
I actually sculpted Gollum out of marzipan. It was a huge hit at the party. That
was
bad.
He was holding sushi in his hands. Just saying.
This is the second straight podcast where I've thought of Waiting for Guffman now, because the paper dolls is one thing, but marzipan Gollum is kind of an entire thing altogether.
You guys, I was so proud of myself. You don't even know.
You should be. That seems like an undertaking.
Yeah, I mean, it's like 10 years ago, and it's still like the best thing I ever made for an Oscar party.
Nice.
Here's one for Nick. When from Heartful. When does your book see publication, and who is the publisher?
Oh, my gosh. It's Oxford University Press, and it's supposed to come out in June or July.
And what's the title? Do we know?
Right now, it's called The Desiring Image.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Yeah, and even better, it will have Velvet Goldmine on the cover. So judge that fucking book by its cover.
Awesome. I know I already desire it, so it's an appropriately titled work.
Exactly. Thank you. I'm all ISBN'd up, but...
Awesome.
Okay, so Johnny says he's tired about hearing about snubs, but so he wants to know which names elicited squeals of delight from us in... I'm sorry, on Thursday morning, we already said Ben Zeitlin for Joe and I, but yep. Did Nick and Katie, did you have any squeals?
I'd sign on to that one.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest squeal moment by far.
I also did for Lucy Alabar when it got adapted screenplay. So.
Yeah.
That was less of a surprise, but
I was still very happy.
It wasn't a squeal, but I did a little yes when Emmanuel Riva was named.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Quavon Janae. And probably my biggest one was for How to Survive a Plague.
Yeah, I'm trying to even remember what they were actually announcing at the time and what was like. Because did they announce documentaries on TV or is that? Oh, no, Nick.
That was that.
All right, Nick, I'm rubbing it in.
Nick had.
I don't understand this, Nick. So what were they showing on the Today Show, like when in Chicago?
I can't even. There were huge, long commercial breaks. And all three networks, I went back and forth. I'm still for the age when there were three networks. And but then they were at one point they were talking about a recipe, and to somebody else they were talking about some kind of police officer who'd won some kind of prize. Like it was just no one just mentioned there
it
wasn't
was
even
just
like
local news
in an hour. Well, no, it was like just like the Today Show fucking around talking about like how the new Treasury Secretary nominee's like signature looks too much like a bunch of zeros and that's all freaky. So Savannah Guthrie and all of them just like made their signatures on TV so we could see them. It was like, what is happening? But every year I think like because it doesn't, you know, I'm too eager and I'm like, Derek, do you think it's not going to happen? Of course it's going to happen. Do you think they're not going to have it? Of course they're going to have it. And then...
Oh my God, that's a nightmare.
I feel that I just walked downstairs to my Christmas morning stocking and it had a piece of paper in it that said, hey, all the kids are playing with your toys down the street. Here's a list of them. What?
Well, so you don't feel too bad, it was the worst nomination presentation I have ever seen in my entire life. I was...
Yeah, I didn't like it.
Baffled and outraged.
But Emma
awful.
Stone was so cute.
It made me hate Emma Stone for that 20 minutes.
Oh, really?
The banter in between that whole thing were like, I mean, we made fun of it earlier with like, you know, he's won before. Like, just read the nominations. Like, we don't need commentary in between. The fact that they read the best
especially
song,
don't need to hear like, this is totally stale and all these guys are boring while they're being nominated. Like, that felt a little shitty.
And reading the best song nominees.
Well, I felt a little shitty hearing the names, so I was glad for the distraction.
I guess.
Well, I think we can leave it to the other 330 million of us to feel shitty about that category without the person conveying the news to the five nominees. Being like, hey, everybody feels shitty. So you know.
Well, and like the only people who are watching the nominations that early are the people who care about like the tradition of it. So like, just give us the tradition of it and don't like, I don't know. And then it was so tacky reading the best song nominations just because Seth MacFarlane was nominated when they never read the best song nominations. It was infuriating.
So that doesn't bode well for your experience on the High Holy Night, Joe.
No.
No.
Hey, what is Austria remind you guys of? Hitler? Huh? Yeah. What? That was a good joke.
What?
Oh, the Hitler joke?
Austria, Germany, co-production,
oh,
Hitler joke.
Yeah.
Wrong. Give me a Charlie Sheen action come the telecast night. Like, Warren Beatty sleeps with a lot of people. I can see all the jokes from here.
Okay, so more reader questions.
Yes.
Here's a two-parter, because Bia and RJ both wanted to know our feelings about Amy Adams. Specifically, if we think she has an upset chance because she is due, and also if we feel she's just going to vanish after this nomination like Marsha Mason did.
Wow, that is unkind. Okay.
Stick the knife in at the end of the question.
Yeah. I'm sensing a little bit of a point of view on the asker's part on that one.
Well, I mean, it is like Amy Adams, as I previously mentioned, she did, you guys all know I'm like really obsessed with the Oscar hierarchies, and I think nominations are actually more telling about how well regarded someone is than than wins. Because wins, you can have a, you know, a lucky break. Nominations, right. Especially a lot of them. And she has entered the top 50 actresses of all time with Oscar with this nomination.
Yeah, I kind of realized after the fact that I was stupid not to think she was going to get a nomination because they nominate her all the time. She's always in there somehow. Mm-hmm. They clearly like her a lot, but that, but that doesn't mean she's going to win this year. That's not happening.
Yeah, I mean, again, because of the long campaign season, I could see things going in a whole lot of directions and a whole lot of races. And if Harvey Weinstein does decide, it's Weinstein's got the master, yes?
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. If he decides that he, you know, whatever, 3 weeks into this is like feeling bored with trying to get Silver Linings Playbook Best Picture, like if he wants to take a week to try and muscle Amy Adams in, he very well might.
He's not gonna get, once he's got a bone in his mouth, he doesn't stop shaking. he's gonna be with Silver Linings Playbook till Oscar night.
You know, one more nomination for her, and I don't know how you couldn't, that doesn't become the story.
Well, hi, Thelma Ritter, Glenn Close, like, there's other people.
Well, no, I guess I wasn't alive for one of them, and I wasn't conscious for the others.
So well, I mean, Julianne Moore has the same amount.
No, I know, but I mean that it's at least going to be if Amy Adams gets nominated one more time, the at least part of the conversation is going to be
that she's
this is Amy Adams' fifth nomination. When is she going to win? At the very least, it's going to be that.
Mm-hmm.
But it is kind of sad that I've heard from so many of those on Twitter a bunch. They're like, "Oh God, I'm so over this Amy Adams getting nominated thing." Seems like it's what got kind of kicked in. Like I've heard the Marsha Mason comparison before.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who
before. I mean, in the last 2 days.
I don't know who was supposed to get that supporting actor spot instead of Amy. I guess Nicole Kidman, fair enough. But, like, it's not like that category was so crazy crowded that they put Amy Adams in for mediocre work. Like, she's really good in The Master, and there's not a ton of other people out there, at least in movies that people liked, which is, you know, the Paperboys problem.
I disagree, but I've written about it too much, probably. I really feel like she didn't add anything to the sketchiness of the role, and that people are, the only thing about it that's working for her, I think, is that it's so sketchy that people are projecting all this meaning onto her performance.
Mm.
I totally agree, and not even in a, I mean, a lot of that movie is about projecting onto things that aren't there, but it's not interesting in that way. Like, I don't really get the work either, but
they could have nominated worse things, though, I feel like.
That's kind of the
they could have. And
they could have nominated Samantha Barks for Les Mis.
But I'm assuming that
I liked
Les Mis a lot, but I wasn't crazy about her in that. Okay, nominated Amanda Seyfried in Les Mis. How about that?
Yeah, that was
I think Ann Dowd might be a little bit sad about Amy Adams, but I assume Ann Dowd is more sad about Helen Hunt's Oscar nomination release from her publicist being, I mean, I just made oatmeal for my daughter. It's not like I went and had champagne for breakfast. It's
not that big a deal.
Like, hey, we get it. You're totally over it.
Watch out
in your car park.
I use the Oscar I already have to stir the oatmeal. It's totally not a big deal.
I just feel kind of bad that, like, if this is going to be the direction that Amy Adams' reputation takes, where it's like, you know, oh, she's the undeserved Oscar nominee. Like, two of her four nominations I thought were for brilliant work.
Yeah,
and
yeah, but 50% is not great to hang your hat on.
Okay. I mean, I think she's good. The only one I think is an unworthy nomination is Doubt. Really, like,
I think they're actually different from each other too, which is unusual for people who get nominated that often. Like, there's more light between those four characters she played than among Marsha Mason's four characters.
Oh yeah, I will. Yeah, that's definitely true. So props to Amy for versatility.
Like Turn on the Road. I'll say it.
Oh man,
I did too. I thought she was good on the road.
Oh, I hated her in that.
Yeah, I was not nuts about her on the road.
But maybe I'm obviously on the other end of the Oscar cliff with her because I'm. I guess
you're on the Marsha Mason side.
It'll be called a backlash. which happens to anybody if people feel they are rewarded too often.
Mm.
You know, it's just part of the cycle.
The Beast of the Southern Wild backlash is going to get so ugly.
I don't even want to listen to it. I'm going to shut it out.
Okay, so I have two more. Actually, one's not a question. Sophie Okonedo.
No way! Somebody beat me to it.
Comments and says, "Stop making fun of me." In a post about questions.
What are you talking about? I'm the only person who thinks about you. How can I be with you.
Could she just get something else, another good role, please? Like,
wait, you don't count Aeon Flux as a good role?
Oh, sad.
Move right now with Rebecca Gayheart, so step all the way off.
And she should be on a television show at the very least. Like, she should be on some really good cable show as, like, a second lead or something like that. Something.
Yeah.
And James is wondering if we would all say James is amazing at the same time.
Is this James from Greece whom we love?
Yes, we love him.
Okay.
James is amazing.
He's amazing. Hey. That's a lot of synchronization for us.
Yes, that was... Yes, that was the best we could do.
It was a little bleak. We tried.
We did try.
We recorded it live. What can you do?
That's true. And he also wants to know who we're each rooting for in Best Actress, unless we don't want to reveal that just yet.
I can reveal. I think it's a matter of, and I always feel like I would feel this way if I had an actual vote, if I had a ballot, where it's like, okay, am I going to vote my conscience, or am I going to vote based on the two who have a shot at winning, and do I want my vote to count? So if I'm voting my conscience, it's obviously Emmanuel Riva. But if I'm choosing between Chastain and Jennifer Lawrence, I'm voting Jennifer Lawrence.
Oh, interesting. I was going to say the opposite, basically, that I would go for Chastain, because it feels so clearly like it's Jennifer Lawrence's now, like, given the lack of overall zero. Like, I feel like, I mean, Catherine Bigelow's lack of a director nomination seemed to indicate some level of not loving Zero Dark Thirty. I mean, maybe it's still a contest. I'd be excited for that to happen, but I thought Chastain was really, really great in that. But I also, there's also part of me that would go for Riva, too, so it's hard.
I would, I'm all in for Riva, but if I was trying to break a tie, I would go with Chastain.
So all of you hate children. I just saw Amour yesterday and am totally obsessed with it. But I actually still... Emmanuel Riva and Quvenzhané Wallace are sort of a dead heat for me right now. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine voting for the other two. I still don't understand how Jennifer Lawrence is getting this far on that part, which she's perfectly good at, but just doesn't seem like a great part to me. And I actually think everything about Amy Adams and The Master, I think even more about Jessica Chastain in Zero Dark Thirty. Like, I left that movie having no real sense of who this woman is. And the tone of the performance seemed to change from scene to scene, and I didn't track her at all, which I was really surprised by. Not a fan.
Am I the only one who... God love Quvenzhané Wallace. She's adorable and wonderful, and that face on that girl. But I really do credit a good chunk of that performance to Ben Zeitlin. Like, just on the matter of how young she was when she made it. I can't quite graft actorly consciousness onto a girl that young.
Yeah, I think the amount of voiceover is what kind of seals it for me. Like, so much of that performance is in voiceover, and that, I think that indicates the, like, how young she was and how hard it is to get a performance at that age.
Like, nothing against her at all. Like, it's just the realities of life, basically. But
well, I mean, Mark Harris wrote a big piece on that, you know, she shouldn't should not be.
I agree with that
100%. But I'm curious, Nick, about why you feel so strongly about it as a performance as opposed to just the camera observing her.
Well, I mean, like, I think there's a lot of grown... I mean, we lost, like, 8 years of Julianne Moore's career while she tried to figure out how to just be on camera and not do much. You know, like, that's, like, an ideal that a lot of actors aspire to, of just being sort of intuitive and dialing back. And, like, then I think she's... I mean, that sounds specious when you put it that way, but I actually do feel that way. But that I think that character has a lot of competing. Like, she loves her dad. She's clearly kind of scared of her dad. She's sort of entranced with what's happening. She realizes things that are happening are not great. Like, in the moment, she just has a really readable face. And, like, I feel like it's like watching a pretty great improv performance of how she changes how some of those scenes are going, just in how she reacts. And, clearly a lot of it is owed to the director, but it seems like the director has also been at pains in ways, I believe, to say that a lot of the what he was doing kind of came from her and having her rewrite a lot of her lines. And I just think the movie really works because of how she is in it. And it's not... See, I understand the parts of acting that are not involved in what she's doing, but but I think it's a kind of acting, and mm-hmm. I think she's pretty tremendous in it.
Yeah. I mean, I love that movie.
And she gave me $50.
So. She gave you a big pile of crabs on a table.
She did. We beasted them together.
She told me that was her favorite scene to shoot.
Well, yeah.
I bet, yeah.
Scream and
she told Oprah the same thing, so it's you.
And no love for Naomi Watts, who I actually think was really, really good in The Impossible. And The Impossible has its problems, but she's not one of them.
She's
not
really good in it.
I mean, she shouldn't win, but I think she's...
And you're not just, like, rallying the troops with Reese Witherspoon right now, which
well,
is completely predictable for you?
So far as you know. Yeah. You don't know my secret correspondence with Reese Witherspoon.
Oh, I think I might.
Okay, so that was all the reader questions.
Thanks, readers.
Thank you.
To be continued, we'll run through the categories very briefly in part two, but this was our initial take on the Oscar nominations.